Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside by Scott Tobin. It's another week, and we've got football, we've got playoff races in baseball. It is an absolute great time to be a sports fan right now. Scott, how are you doing after a very positive weekend as far as St. Louis is concerned? Maybe not the whole state of Missouri, but St. Louis is concerned. Positive weekend.
Yeah, it was a good weekend sports-wise in St. Louis and the state of Missouri for the most part. I mean, Columbia fans a little disappointed, I guess, although the Tigers showed a lot in their game on Saturday. We'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes. But overall, man, pretty good. How about your weekend? How'd you get through it? How was your scouting during high school football on Friday night?
Oh, the scouting was interesting, to say the least. Pattonville got blown out by Kirkwood. I mean, I think that was kind of a given anyway. It's Jeremy Macklin's team. But it was nice being back at the old high school, getting a chance to see the new stadium and all of that. It was a lot of fun. Ran into my band director. Had a lot of fun catching up with him. Going to have to go back over there and check out the renovated band room that they apparently now have as well. So it was nice. It got me geared up and ready to go for this Friday night when Pattonville travels to Fox. Then I got a chance to see Luther North on Saturday as well. So a big weekend full of football for me.
That's good. Yeah, I got coming up this weekend, I'll get to see old Zumwalt North. I got Washington Zumwalt North on Friday night. North not playing really well. They're 0-3 so far. But that's always a good matchup when those two teams get together. It kind of decides who's going to win that conference usually. So we'll see what happens when they match up. They're actually playing in Washington this week. So we'll see what happens.
That should be a lot of fun. And we'll definitely have a posting on Friday of where you can hear those games as well, because it is high school football time and you absolutely have to listen in whenever you get a chance. But it's also NFL football time as well. Week one is mostly in the books. We've got the Monday night football game going on right now between the Ravens and the Raiders. 14-10 Ravens lead as they just exit halftime. Ravens have the ball at about their 30-yard line. But we got to talk about the big time injuries that have happened in week one. And look, we see this every year. Week one is always a week where significant injuries do happen. You always hope to avoid them as much as possible. But with the shortened preseason, the fact that a lot of starters weren't playing in the preseason as well, it feels like you're going to get more significant injuries earlier on than you're used to. And we saw that already. And the big one for me, obviously, I think for you as well, because you picked them to win the division, is Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Washington football team. He goes on the IR today with a hip injury. He's going to be out at least 6 to 8 weeks. He could only miss 3 weeks, depending on the results of the doctors and all of that. He may be out just 3 weeks, but he could be out as well as long as 6 to 8 weeks. He was injured on a second quarter hit, and that gives Tyler Heinicke, the former Battlehawk, a chance to take over and lead the Washington football team right now. But how significant to you is that injury to Ryan Fitzpatrick to the Washington football team's chances this year?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge because, that was what we said was, they needed Fitzpatrick to come in and really lead that offense, because with the defense they had, if their offense is just decent, I thought they could win the division. And we saw what happened yesterday. Fitzpatrick gets hurt, and then that offense, Heinicke played okay, but they didn't score any points when he came in the game. They were just okay. So, it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle this. I don't know how you go – if you're a Redskin fan – if you're a Washington football team fan.
Dollar in the jar.
Yeah, it's going to happen more than once, I'm sure. But I don't know if you're the coach or the head of that organization, you look at your guys and go, okay, we know we were talking about playoffs potentially. We're going to go into the next 8 weeks with Tyler Heinicke. I know he looked okay last year in the playoff game, but I think I'm going to be surprised with Ron Rivera's history with him. I'm going to be surprised if Cam Newton doesn't end up in Washington in the next couple of weeks.
I was going to exactly ask you that question. Is Cam Newton somebody that you could see coming into Washington? Obviously, Kyle Allen is the number two right now. They brought in a Shermer as on the practice squad, but nothing really too crazy there. But is Cam Newton, in your mind, a guy that you will see there? I mean, he was cut by the Patriots, and it wasn't because of COVID. It was really just because Mac Jones beat him out. But does Rivera give him a shot in Washington, or does he really just try to see what he's got with Heinicke?
I think you've got to try to bring Cam in. I mean, if you were a team that didn't have playoff aspirations, I think then you would let Heinicke play and say, okay, let's see what we've got. But when you're a team that's got playoff aspirations, you know that division's not real strong. I think you almost have to at least bring Cam in and have a quarterback situation and have the two of them battle it out.
I can see that exact thing happening. Like you said, the connection that Rivera has with Newton, it just makes too much sense for them to at least not make that phone call. And it'll tell you 100% whether Cam Newton is going to be able to play in this league anymore or not if he gets that call. If he doesn't get that call, I don't see him going anywhere else. It could be the very end of Cam Newton's career if the Washington football team do not give him a call. Another team with playoff aspirations that – once again, is dealing with injuries are the San Francisco 49ers. You've got Jason Verrett tore his ACL in the game yesterday, and he's going to be out the entire year, obviously. And you feel terrible for this kid. Raheem Mostert goes on the IL again. He's going to miss 8 weeks with chipped cartilage in his knee. Might require arthroscopic surgery. He's going to be getting a second opinion here in the next couple of days. But, you know, we didn't think the 49ers were going to amount to a whole lot of wins this year. Although fans in San Francisco are expecting them to compete in the NFC West, they were blowing out the Lions until the fourth quarter of that game. But losing Mostert is probably the last straw in them having a positive year this year. I mean, you got Jimmy G playing quarterback right now, but you're going to be transitioning to Trey Lance at some point. Does the injury to Mostert basically end all hope that the 49ers have a playoff run in them, or did they show enough yesterday that make you go, okay, they can get by without him?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to be okay for a little while. We'll see how the next couple of weeks play out. And, you know, you talk about Jimmy G and transferring to Trey Lance. Garoppolo played awfully well yesterday. If he plays like that, why rush Trey Lance? You know, I think the ideal thing for San Francisco, honestly, would be as if Trey Lance doesn't touch the field this year. I think that would be the best thing for him and have a kind of a Patrick Mahomes situation where maybe in week 16 he comes in and plays, you know, depending on how you are. But I think if Trey Lance doesn't touch the field at all, I think that's probably a win for San Francisco.
I think you're right. I mean, anytime you have a rookie quarterback on a team, you want to give him as much opportunity to absorb and learn and not take the hits that you possibly can. I mean, we saw it last year a little bit with Tua. He sat for a little while, but then he came in. You saw it. Justin Herbert played for the Chargers last year. I mean, a lot of these younger quarterbacks are going right into NFL systems. Now, college football has implemented more of the NFL style system than in years past, so they're used to that kind of play. But I'm still of the mindset that I want my rookies to be able to sit and absorb and learn from somebody that's going to teach them the right way going. I mean, you saw this with Drew Brees, and now Jameis Winston has looked really good. You saw it early in his career, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You saw what Aaron Rodgers has been able to do after he sat. So I'm on the mindset that I'd love to see these guys sit, absorb, learn, and watch the game and then get into it. But the reason some of these guys are going so high is because the quarterbacks that they have are terrible. So they almost have to go in. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think Trey Lance, if he doesn't see the field, it's a positive. But if he does get in, I think it's probably, like you're right, more closer to the end of the year if Jimmy G plays as well as he did in game one.
Yeah, and I mean, Lance is a different situation than a guy like Trevor Lawrence who played big-time college football. You know, I mean, pretty much every game Trevor Lawrence played in was like playing in an NFL game. You know, Trey Lance didn't really play the top-level competition in college coming out of South Dakota. So, and, you know, he's not real refined. You know, he's got a big arm, but there's a lot of things that he still needs to work on. So I think a guy like that, if he can sit and learn behind Garoppolo, if Jimmy G can stay healthy, I think it just really helps him if you don't have to rush him out there.
And that's the key for Garoppolo is staying healthy, and that's the key for the 49ers. Another guy that is going to miss some time is Denver's Jerry Jeudy. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. He suffered a high ankle sprain in the third quarter yesterday of their win. They kind of avoided disaster because that looked a lot worse than it actually ended up being, and I think the Broncos are breathing a sigh of relief that it is just a high ankle sprain. Teddy Bridgewater looked pretty good. I think we were a little surprised by that, but – you know, it's Teddy Bridgewater. He surprised people left and right throughout his entire career. So, you know, who knows? But missing Jerry Jeudy is going to be a huge, huge thing for them for the next couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if you saw that, because when it happened, I thought, oh, man, his season's over, because that looked nasty. So if they can get him back in a few weeks, that's a huge win. And, yeah, Denver looked good. I'm not sure if it was more Denver looked good or the Giants are just worse than anybody thought they were. Saquon Barkley did not look good at all. You know, at one point he was at 10 carries for 20 yards. You know, and that defense didn't play very well. You know, we talked about West Coast teams usually struggling when they go to the East Coast. That didn't happen at all yesterday. Totally, 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 totally screwed my picks for this week. Yeah, you know, the Giants didn't look good at all. There were a bunch of teams that didn't look good. I mean, if you were picking games yesterday, good luck, because some of those you're like, wait, what just happened? And the team that we thought their offense would at least be decent and their defense was going to struggle playing at home against the Jalen Hurts. And what the hell are the Atlanta Falcons doing?
Not being competitive. They are setting themselves up for a fire sale for sure. They just cannot. They're such an enigma that ever since that Super Bowl loss, they've been completely lost. They have no identity. They have no passion, confidence, anything in their blood. Even when they're at home, they've got nothing. And you saw that against the Eagles.
Yeah. And, you know, again, here, my biggest shock of the day, and I'm going to see what you think about this. We talked about games that we thought were, you know, flip of the coin games that we went back and forth on. We talked about a team in the AFC that we thought was going to be right there making a run. The Tennessee Titans looked god-awful yesterday. I mean, they looked awful on offense. They looked awful on defense. They just looked bad.
They really did, and they're actually one of my losers of the week. I mean, Derrick Henry, 17 carries for just 58 yards. A.J. Brown, 49 yards receiving. The kicking game for the Titans is still a complete disaster. I mean, it is just 1 week, and I think you look at it and you go, okay, Tennessee did not play any of their starters in the preseason for the most part. You know, Derrick Henry, Tannehill, Brown, Julio Jones, none of these guys really played in the preseason. So this is essentially their preseason these first couple of weeks. And that was a gamble. That's a risk that you're taking by saying, hey, look, we're going to sit our guys for the preseason games, and then we're going to risk the first couple of games of the season in a division that's highly winnable, the one that you've won the last couple of years. But we're going to give, you know, a couple of other teams a chance to stay in it by essentially making the first couple games preseason games for our starters, even though the regular season. And I think that's a gamble that they took. And right now, obviously, doesn't look like a good gamble.
No. And if I would have told you after week one that in the NFC, AFC South, the Houston Texans would be in first place, how much money do you think I would have won on that bet a couple of weeks ago?
Probably a lot, considering Tyrod Taylor was their starter, not even Deshaun Watson. I mean, who knows? And that's the thing. I mean, you would think Tennessee would have been up there. Obviously, Jacksonville is Jacksonville. Indianapolis, you know, Carson Wentz just coming back from his injury and then from a COVID thing and then all of that. It's surprising, but it's not terribly surprising at all. I mean, you could have laid money down on Jacksonville or Houston being one of the two teams at the top of the AFC South after week one, because they were playing each other. Now, granted, they probably could have tied too, but you would have won a lot of money either way, because no one had any faith in either of those teams.
No. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence played pretty well yesterday. Yeah, he did throw three interceptions, but he threw for 300 yards yesterday. He looked pretty decent. I mean, he didn't look like a rookie quarterback out there that didn't have a clue what he was doing. And, you know, and I know people will say, oh, well, he threw three interceptions. You know, Peyton Manning still has the rookie quarterback record for interceptions in his first year. So don't take anything by that.
And he got better. He got better as the game went on. And that's the key thing. I mean, if you would have sat there and said, yeah, he threw for three touchdowns in the first half and, you know, ended up throwing three picks and gave away the game in the second half, you would have been like, oh, okay, that's a rookie thing. But he threw the interceptions early, but still kept with the game. And yeah, they had to throw because they were behind. But he still connected on three touchdowns. He learned as he went through that game where to throw the ball, how to keep it away from defenders. I mean, that second touchdown pass was perfect. He placed it in the exact right spot. So the fact that he learned and progressed in the game makes you go, okay, maybe he does have something. And I'm one of those guys that I look at and I go, I'm not entirely sure what people see in him, but I'm willing to watch and learn and see if he does progress. And if he continues to do that week in and week out, I'll sit back and go, okay, hey, I see it now. Congratulations. He's going to be a really, really good quarterback. It's 1 week. I'd like to see what he does next week, but I do think I can see maybe a little bit of what people saw of him in college.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a really good skill set. We talked about this quite a bit last week. You know, I mean, he's not going to have a great year because, you know, the team's not very good, but, you know, I think he's going to be decent. I think he's going to be, you know, in a couple of years, we're going to say, okay, there was a reason why they picked him number one overall. Yeah, it was a weird day in the NFL yesterday, man. There are some games that I don't understand. And then I guess real quick, we'll talk about the best game of the day. I hope I'm not screwing up your whole show plan for this hour.
I was going to run down the picks because you were talking about them. So we can run down the picks, and then, yeah, we'll definitely talk about what was the absolute best game of the day. So, obviously, we both had Tampa in that Thursday night game. We got that one. We got the Philadelphia-Atlanta game completely wrong. We got the Buffalo-Pittsburgh game completely wrong. I got the Cincinnati game right. I'll take that one. We both got San Francisco right. We both got the Tennessee game wrong. We both got the Seattle game right. So, hey, there we go. I got the Chargers over Washington. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Justin Herbert. We both got Carolina. We both missed on Jacksonville. We both missed on New England. We both way missed on Green Bay. I think everybody missed on Green Bay. We both missed on the Giants. We both hit on the Rams. So not a great week for you, 5-10. I'm not much better at 7-8. I think we'll do better in week two for sure. But, man, we missed on the one game that was almost an instant classic, and that was Kansas City-Cleveland. We both went with the Browns. Obviously, the Chiefs ended up winning this game, but holy shit, was this a tale of two halves? And I'll be perfectly honest. I've got the Chiefs and Browns as both winners this week, but I also have the Chiefs as losers this week as well in my winners and losers. But go ahead and tell me what you saw in that Browns-Chiefs game.
They're the two best teams in the league after week one. I don't think there's much question. I mean, you know, they just both have way more talent, and, you know, they both missed two of their best players. OBJ decided he wasn't able to play, you know, and they said, you know, listening to the broadcast crew, they said he just didn't look real fluid, didn't look like his leg was real loose in pregame. And then Tyrann Mathieu also unable to play for Kansas City, even though he was activated. But, you know, those two teams, I think we're going to see him play again at the end of January. I really do. I think that's a rematch of the AFC Championship game, because I don't think there's any other team that has as much talent as they have. You know, Baker Mayfield played a really good game for three quarters and almost four full quarters. And I'm not – a lot of people are mad at him for the interception. If you go back and look at that pick, he wasn't trying to throw that ball. He was trying to throw that ball out of bounds. He had three defenders on his legs. He couldn't step forward, and he was falling as he threw it. So he wasn't trying to complete that pass. He was trying to throw that ball away. He just couldn't step into it and get anything on it. And he didn't want to take the sack with one timeout left. You know, so, I mean, stuff like that happens. But, you know, Cleveland looked really good. To go into Kansas City and dominate the first half the way they did, you know, I mean, basically there's three plays that were the difference in that game. You look at the Nick Chubb fumble in the third quarter when the Cleveland was going in to score again. That kind of changed the momentum. The dropped punt, obviously, in the fourth quarter. And then the Patrick Mahomes throw, you know, Cleveland goes up by 9 with 7 minutes left. And Mahomes gets the ball and makes a throw that nobody else in the world can make to Tyreek Hill. That, you know, again, and Tyreek Hill gets open in space, he's going to score. And John Johnson was just absolutely lost on that. He was doing donuts and I don't know what, trying to figure out where he was going there. But, you know, no other quarterback in football makes that throw, you know, and that changed it. They score that touchdown, and then, like I said, Cleveland comes out, and they had the missed punt. And that drive, you know, Cleveland's driving down the field there too, and Baker threw a pass to the rookie wide receiver out of Penn State, and the ball's in his hands. Kansas City defender actually did a really good job, got his hand in between the receiver's hands, knocked the ball away at the last second. Otherwise, that's a first down. Cleveland keeps driving, and who knows. And then they have the fumble on the punt that gives Kansas City the ball on the 15-yard line. And so, you know, three plays basically changed that game. But, you know, I've seen a lot of people say, oh, Cleveland, yeah, Baker, they can't win. I think they proved they can because they went into Kansas City and absolutely played with the Chiefs. And, again, you have to give Patrick Mahomes all the credit in the world. How many times have we seen him do it in his career? You know, they're down 14, they're down 17 in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden in a three-minute span, he's put up 17 points, and you're like, how the hell did that just happen? But, yeah, I think both of those teams are going to get better. Kansas City's defense has to get better.
Yep.
I mean, their run defense was non-existent in the first half. They did play a little bit better in the second half. They kind of slowed down the Browns' running game a little bit. The Browns' defense played pretty well for most of the game. You know, didn't get as much of a pass rush on Mahomes as I thought they would until that last drive when you saw Clowney and Myles Garrett sack him finally, which I thought that was going to be the play that let the Browns come back and win that game. But both of those teams' defense stepped up a little bit at times. I think, like I said, I think their defenses are going to get better. And I think both of those teams, you know, when we get to January, I think those are the last two teams standing in the NFL. And I think that's going to be the Super Bowl, honestly, because I don't think anybody in the NFC can compete with either one of those teams from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, early in the season, it's hard to see any NFC team really competing at all. And that, you know, the reason I got Kansas City is a winner, obviously 23 points in the second half for the comeback win. They took advantage of the turnovers that they were able to force, and that's a big, big thing. And if you can score points off of turnovers, especially touchdowns off of turnovers, that you're going to win a lot of games. You know, Mahomes, like you said, 27 of 36, 337 yards, three touchdowns. Tyreek Hill, 197 yards on 11 catches and a touchdown. That's why they're a winner. But on the flip side, they were also a loser in my mind as well, because the defense gave up 457 total yards of offense. Now, granted, a lot of that was in the first half with Baker Mayfield just throwing all over the place and Nick Chubb running. I mean, they definitely, the Browns show they belong, for sure. But also, as far as Kansas City is concerned, who else besides Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are going to step up? You know, they didn't have a much of a running game, and a little of that is credit to the Browns' run defense. But who else is going to catch a ball for Kansas City? And we saw a little bit of this last year, even with Sammy Watkins in Kansas City. It was Kelce and Hill in the playoffs. Kelce and Hill. Who is going to step up and be that next guy that's going to kind of take the pressure off those guys so that it's not just that trio trying to win games? If the defense is going to give up that many points and that many yards, you can't continuously come back from 20 points down week in and week out, no matter how good you are. Someone's got to step up on the offense to help take the load off. Is there anybody that you see on the scene that can do that?
Hardman's got to be the guy. You know, we've seen how dangerous he can be as well. They didn't use him a whole lot yesterday as a receiver. They didn't really even throw the ball his way a whole lot. But he's the guy that's got the speed, and we've seen him make huge plays as a receiver and in special teams, you know, the last couple of years. So he's the guy. And then Edward Zolaire, I've got questions. You know, is he an every down back? I'm just not sure that he is. You know, and that's why – and that comes back to, you know, we talked about this on Thursday night. That's why I said I think the Browns are the better team, because when you look at the Browns and all the weapons they have all over the field, I think they're just deeper, you know, at wide receiver, at tight end, at running back than Kansas City is. And so that's why I still think, even after that loss the other night, I still think they come back and win. And something we talk about all the time is you have to know how to lose to be able to win. And to go into Arrowhead and play the Chiefs as tough as they did and lose that game, imagine the experience that's going to give them. That's two times now that they've played the Chiefs tough at Arrowhead in a playoff game, now this game. Imagine if they go into that AFC Championship game. Are they going to be overwhelmed by the crowd or the noise or the moment? No, because they've been there. They know now what it takes to be able to win, because in all honesty, they should have won that game yesterday.
Yeah, they really should have, and that's why I had them as a winner in my week's winners and losers, just because they did. They showed they belong there. They showed that they can go toe-to-toe with the AFC champion, essentially. And, yeah, they're going to be one of those teams that you're going to have to look at the end of the day and go, okay, they've got the depth, like you said. They were missing Beckham Jr., and missing him and only losing by a couple of points to Kansas City – that could have been the difference. Now, obviously, Matthew being out as well maybe would have washed out, but still, you just never know. I mean, he could have made a huge difference. So I do think. I think Cleveland's a winner. I think they're there at the end. I think Kansas City's a winner. I look at Arizona, too. Arizona, big-time winner for me yesterday. Kyler Murray, 5 touchdowns, 4 of those passing on 289 yards passing. DeAndre Hopkins went off for 2 touchdowns. Chandler Jones, 5 sacks yesterday against Tennessee. So, you know, we thought Arizona could be a dark horse type of team. It's going to be tough to win that NFC West with Seattle and L.A. playing well, at least early on in the season. But I'm still one of those people. I like Arizona. I think if they can protect Kyler Murray offensively and Chandler Jones can continue to run havoc on teams' quarterbacks, Arizona's going to be a scary team.
They are. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting. And that's what kind of what we talked about was, could Arizona's defense step up? Here's the thing. You go into next week, everybody's going to be double-teaming Chandler Jones. Okay, you double-team Chandler Jones. Who all of a sudden's got one-on-one on the other side? Is that Watt guy? Because I think he can still be pretty good and cause some havoc. So, you know, their defense is going to be – what they showed yesterday is that they could be really scary, and that was the question about them for me in a lot of ways, was could their defense step up? If Kyler Murray plays like – I mean, I don't expect him to play like he did yesterday every week, but if he can be consistent, it's going to be really, really fun to watch them. They're going to be a team that can light it up and put big-time points on the board.
Don't worry. The beard is coming back, Blues Fan Reacts. It's on its way. If you've watched the show, you know we've got some fun stuff in store for Scott's beard.
Yeah, it's coming back. I was bored the other day, so I decided to pull the razor out and just take it off. But it'll be back in a couple of weeks. Don't worry. I'm already working on it.
Another team that was a winner for me, and I think is a surprise for a lot of people, was the New Orleans Saints. You know, Jameis Winston, this is the craziest thing. The least amount of passing yards in a 5-touchdown game in NFL history. He had 148 yards on 14 of 20 passing through 5 touchdown passes. The Saints combined for 171 yards rushing as well. And that defense really shut down the Packers' run game, and they forced Aaron Rodgers to get benched. And on the flip side, I have Green Bay as one of my losers because of the terrible performance they put out there. And you look at it and you go, okay, was New Orleans that good? Or is Aaron Rodgers just trolling the Packers and basically saying, ha-ha, screw you, I'm not going to do anything, and you're going to have to watch us tank this year?
I don't know what that was. I really don't, because, you know, everybody thought, okay, Aaron Rodgers, knowing the kind of guy that he's always been, is going to come out and it's going to be scorched earth and he's going to just light it up. And Aaron Rodgers looks like an old man. I don't know what happened to Aaron Rodgers. There was a picture of him next to Tom Brady.
I saw it.
And he looks like 25 years older than Brady does. He looks old and tired, and I don't know what's happened to Aaron Rodgers. But whatever fire he had wasn't there yesterday, that's for sure. And it could be a long year in Green Bay. We all thought that they were going to come out and really run away, but they didn't look good. You know, Rodgers didn't look good. The run, like you said, the run game looked good, bad. The offensive line looked bad. Their defense was horrible. And you got to give Jameis Winston credit. You know, he came out, he had some short fields to work with, and he didn't make mistakes. You know, he threw 5 touchdowns. He didn't throw any interceptions. You know, maybe he learned a lot sitting behind Drew Brees last year, and maybe he's going to be the guy that people saw at Florida State all those years when they won a national championship, and he was considered, you know, the next big thing coming out of college.
And he was my question mark when it came to the Saints when we were doing the preview, is what kind of Jameis Winston are you going to get? Are you going to get the guy that kind of fell off the earth in Tampa, or the guy that was at Florida State, and then he ended up leading the league in touchdown passes and interceptions? But he's a guy that could throw a bunch of touchdown passes, and he did. He learned from Drew Brees from the interviews I heard today. Is, you know, they were talking about the fact that he came in, pen and paper, sat down, was like, hey, I'm here to learn, I'm here to learn, I'm here to learn. And if he truly did that, New Orleans may have found another diamond in the rough. Because if you remember, when Drew Brees was traded from the then San Diego Chargers to New Orleans, he was coming off a shoulder injury and shoulder surgery. No one really knew what to expect out of him. And obviously he started there, you know, after Hurricane Katrina, and everything kind of went from there. But, you know, New Orleans kind of took a chance on him, now they kind of took a chance on Jameis Winston, and they may have been able to go 2 for 2 the last two times that they take a chance on a quarterback.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, another thing about Winston, he did that without Michael Thomas.
Yeah.
You know, which makes it even more impressive. You know, and talking about Drew Brees and when he left San Diego, think about how different the landscape of the NFL would have been over the last 16 years if doctors in Miami would have said, okay, yeah, we think his shoulder's strong enough. Go ahead and sign Drew Brees. But no, they passed. They said, no, we don't think he's going to hold up. And like you said, New Orleans took a chance, and I'm sure Miami's kicked themselves for 16 years over that mistake.
Yeah, just a few kicks for sure. One of the other teams that I had in my losers bracket is one of the teams that we thought was going to be pretty good this year, and I still think they will. It's the Buffalo Bills. You know, they were at home against Pittsburgh, and they could not finish drives. They really couldn't. They moved the ball all around. They just could not finish at all. They had 4 fumbles, only lost 1 of them, but they couldn't finish anything offensively or defensively. I mean, the Steelers' offensive line was not all that great. They did not get a whole lot of run offense in that first half. You know, Najee Harris had a better second half, but they couldn't get much pressure on Ben Roethlisberger defensively. They could not finish offensive drives. They just looked a little lost. And being at home, that was very, very surprising. Now, like I said, they're going to be there at the end. I think they're going to be the team that wins the AFC North for sure. The AFC East for sure. But it was a little scary, honestly, watching the Bills play yesterday.
Yeah, they definitely looked out of sync. I mean, Josh Allen threw – he had Stephon Diggs deep a couple of times and just overthrew him. Yeah. Hyped up a little bit, first game of the season, you know, crowd, all that stuff, you know, crowd back in the stadium. Maybe the adrenaline was just a little too much and couldn't get it under control. But Buffalo's got to figure out their running game. Their running game is just not very good. And their defense, you know, they've got to figure out how to get a pass rush. That's been their issue. Now, it was their issue last year. You know, they didn't get a whole lot of sacks. They did go draft Broussard out of Miami. You know, that's hopefully going to help them, but it may take him a year or so to step up and really be that presence that they're looking for. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, you know, they were up 10-0, and you got to give the Steelers credit because the Steelers offense looked awful in that first half. You know, Najee Harris had 20 yards rushing at halftime. Like you said, Ben wasn't doing a whole lot, but they found a way to figure it out. And the Steelers defense, you know, and we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, that defense was banged up last year. You know, towards the end of the season when they fell off, you know, TJ Watt was back and healthy in a new contract, and he was all over the field yesterday. You know, that defense looked rejuvenated. And if the Steelers play defense, you know, their offense isn't going to have to do a whole lot because they have a ton of talent on that defensive side of the ball. They can win low-scoring games like they did yesterday.
And that's probably what they're going to have to do. So any other winners or losers in your mind from yesterday?
You look at the Rams, Matthew Stafford's first appearance in LA went pretty well. Andy Dalton played better than I thought he was going to be totally honest with you. I mean, he wasn't great. That Bears offense wasn't great, but he wasn't horrible. I mean, they were in it the first half, but, you know, so I think you have to give them like a half of a game of, hey, good job, Bears.
When you're better than horrible, yeah, that's about all you can expect is a half a game of good job for sure. All right, jumping over to the college football side of things real quick, we got to talk about some of the games that went down on Saturday because there were some big upsets and some really big moves that were made on Saturday. We've got to talk off right off the bat about the Oregon upset of Ohio State, something that you called.
I picked
that
one.
Hey, you thought the Ducks were going to do it, and they did. They move up to number 4 in the polls after that victory. Rushing and passing game worked well for the Ducks. The defense gave up a lot, though, 612 yards of offense. But when it came down to the moment that they needed to step up, that Ducks defense stepped up and was able to stop C.J. Stroud and the Ohio State offense. I asked the question in the tease for the show, is Oregon now a bit of a lock for the college football playoff?
I mean, they're still going to have to win some games. They're going to have to – they'll have to win the Pac-12, first of all. You know, because the Pac-12 is looking pretty good right now after the first couple of weeks of the season. You got some pretty strong-looking teams out there. So they'll have to win the conference. If they win the conference, then I think, yeah, they've got a pretty good shot. Because after watching some of these games, I mean, we were on the border. We were on the verge of having a whole bunch of upsets on Saturday.
There's cupcake a bunch of, week. We thought,
yeah, you know? Yeah, there's a bunch of top 10 teams that I'm not sure are top 10 teams.
And some of those, Notre Dame barely escapes Toledo 32-29. We talked about how hard it was to play in Colorado. Texas A&M just barely squeaks by 10-7. They're a top 10 team, at least they were. Iowa rolled past Iowa State. They move into the top five. Iowa's a team that looks really, really good. You talk about Texas going to the SEC. Well, Arkansas gave them a very, very fun welcome present, a 40-21 stomping of the Longhorns. Wow, or expected?
You know, we talked about that, you know, the other night. You know, that was one of those games that was like, Texas should win, but it wouldn't surprise me if Arkansas's not getting a whole lot of credit or nobody's really talking about it, but the Razorbacks are pretty good. They may pull a couple more upsets before the season's over, and that's going to be a tough matchup for Mizzou after watching what they did this week.
And I'm pretty sure they coached by Barry Odom.
They could be. That could be where he is.
That makes that game even more intriguing when we get to the end of the season. Let's see how that goes. I had on Saturday Miami being on upset alert. Man, App State almost did it. Almost. But Miami hangs on 25-23. Although the best catch of that game, did you see the video?
I did.
The cat that fell from the second level and they caught it in an American flag.
Yeah.
Wow. A hell of a game there, but an even better catch by the fans.
Yeah, that was a great moment just to see that because there was a lot of people working together to save the cat.
And you say Americans can't work together. Ha, 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 ha. BYU upsets number 21 Utah. That's another game that we had on Saturday that we thought was going to be a tough out for the Utes going to BYU. Obviously, that holds true. And I think the biggest surprise, I mean, I don't know if it was a big surprise, but a big surprise in my mind, Stanford crushing USC. And not only did they crush him in that game, but they essentially crushed Clay Helton as he gets fired today. And that may open up a carousel of coaching moves here because you know USC is going to go after a big name. And we talked a little bit about this last year. And it was near the end of the year, and I posited the question. You know, Eli Drinkwitz has done a great, good job here at Mizzou. Obviously, they're not winning games at a huge clip right now, but he's a big, sexy name in a sense. He's not going to USC. USC doesn't want to. I don't think USC wants an Eli Drinkwitz. But because of the coaching carousel that's about ready to start up, do we feel that there might be a part where Eli Drinkwitz might get lured away for another job?
I don't think so because I think he's, with the recruiting job that he's done, all these kids, I think he's building something here. I don't think he's ready to walk away. I think he wants to see what he can do here. And while we talk about him being a big, sexy name, and yeah, he's recruited well, he still hasn't won at Division I football. So I don't know how many teams are going to be knocking down his door because you can recruit all day long, but you still have to be able to coach those kids when you get them on campus. So I think Mizzou's got a while before anybody is really banging down the door for Eli Drinkwitz.
That's the hope, for sure. So now that USC has that open spot, any names that you have heard or think may go there? I mean, I got one in my mind that makes sense, but I don't know if it'll actually happen. But who do you see or who have you heard might be targets for USC?
I'm going to throw one at you. He knows the school really well. It didn't end real well there last time.
Okay.
But we know there's some issues up north. Don't be shocked if Pete Carroll goes back to USC.
I didn't even think about that one. It makes sense. If Seattle wants to keep Russell Wilson, and if there's tension between Wilson and Carroll, it may be mutually beneficial for everybody for him to go back to USC and see if they can revive that program. Now, like you said, it did end kind of poorly at that point in time. Obviously, the sanctions came down, but now that the NLIs are in play, that changes things as well. Maybe even changes the landscape of how you look at Pete Carroll's success at USC as well. That's a pretty good idea there for Seattle and USC's sake, for sure. I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, you have to look at Jim Harbaugh. Obviously, his success at Stanford, he knows the California area. That's in my mind, it's not so much that I think he'd be successful there. I think it's just a matter of, you know, if you want a polarizing name, you're going to grab that guy right there and bring him in. I don't know if it would happen. I think USC is looking at it as, hey, we need to make a power move because we're getting ready to see this huge landscape change when it comes to conferences. We need a guy that's a big name and also a guy that's a proven winner. And I don't know if Harbaugh is a proven winner right now, although Michigan does look pretty good this year, but not consistently. So I could see them bringing him in, but I don't think it's actually going to happen. I honestly, outside of Carroll, like you said, I don't know if there's anybody that you can look at and go, that's the guy that USC is going to target.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably somebody that we're not thinking about, and there'll be some hot names. You know, there'll be a guy, you know, somebody like the coach at Cincinnati, if he has a couple of another year or two in a mid-major type program like that that's on the verge, you know, something like that may be a possibility. I don't think Harbaugh, just because, like you said, he's been at Michigan now for a few years. Everybody thought he was going to go to his alma mater and really put Michigan back on the map, and he hasn't been able to win the big games at Michigan. You know, he's really struggled when it's come to the big moments in Michigan. So I don't think that happens. I think when he leaves Michigan, he'll go back to the NFL. That's probably what will happen with Jim Harbaugh.
I could see that being the case as well. So, yeah, we'll have to talk a little bit about this Mizzou-Kentucky game real quick before we move on to baseball. You know, Mizzou falls to Kentucky, 35-28. They still played a good game. And I almost feel like they should have won that game. But Kentucky just did enough at home, trick plays and all that stuff to kind of take that win away from Mizzou. They got behind early, obviously. They fell behind 7-0 and then 14-7 and then 21-7 and just really couldn't catch up. They did tie it up at 28, though, in the fourth quarter, so they had a chance. But what did you see in that Mizzou game that gave you hope? And is there anything that you saw that made you go, this still needs to be fixed?
Oh, there's a lot that still needs to be fixed. And, you know, and we have to remember, you know, I know everybody's excited about Eli Drinkwitz, and there's people now that are like, oh, what, you know, what's going on? Or is he not that good of a coach? You got to remember, this is still really, really early in the process. You know, a lot of these kids that he's bringing in, the recruits, they're not there yet. And you look at that defense, and they're not, this is not a good defensive team. You know, you don't have a linebacker on this team that's SEC caliber, especially in run defense. They can't tackle. You know, they can't stop the run. I mean, Kentucky was just gashing them all over the field. So, you know, they've got to improve that. You know, I saw a lot of people going, oh, man, we got to fire this defensive coordinator. He's horrible. No, the scheme's fine. You just don't have the players. You don't have the talent on defense right now. Your secondary stepped up. You've got a really young secondary. They stepped up, you know, had an interception. Had a fumble recovery, almost had another fumble recovery at the goal. It should have been, honestly, because the last touchdown that Kentucky had, it was a fumble. He wasn't in the end zone, but Mizzou wasn't able to recover it. Kentucky's offensive lineman beat them and landed on it in the end zone, or Mizzou would have had two fumble recoveries in the end zone to take points away from Kentucky. So their secondary played really good. Their defensive line has some pieces. It's just not quite there yet. But overall, what made me feel good is the fact that they were able to fight back. You know, a couple of years ago, Barry Odom team, they get down 21-7. That game's probably 45-7 because those teams just didn't have the fight. This team fought. You know, and Connor Blazak played that fourth quarter on one leg, basically. The last 6 or 7 minutes, he was on one leg and was hobbling and was beat. And, you know, they were able to still be in that game. They had a chance to win or to tie. You know, I mean, they were really seriously fighting. And so that's what makes me feel good is you look at that team and go, okay, yeah, they got beat. You know, everybody kind of thought they were going to get beat in Kentucky. You were hoping, but, you know, kind of thought that was going to happen. But they showed a lot of heart. They showed a lot of fight. And it makes you say, okay, they are building things the right way. Things are moving in the right direction in Columbia.
And if they can win their non-conference games, you know, they can go into full SEC play at a 5-1 record and – really take some momentum into those games as well. So there's, it's 1-1. It's early in the season. You usually don't see conference games this early as well. So that, and you know, the stuff around Kentucky, the bad juju essentially that Mizzou has with the Wildcats. I mean, all of that kind of played into it that you knew they were probably going to lose. You were happy. You would be happy if they won, but the outcome still was pretty positive despite them actually losing that game. So, yeah, lots to look forward to when it comes to Mizzou this year as well. All right, let's jump over to baseball because we talked at the beginning of the show before we came on. We're like, yeah, we're gonna save the Cardinals stuff for last because the game will probably be over by the time we get near the end of the show. You know, it's the top of the eighth inning when we started. Yeah, in 20, 25, 30 minutes, maybe this game will be over. The middle of the ninth is just now starting because the Cardinals score four runs in the ninth inning against the Mets bullpen to blow this game open. It was 3-0 going into that ninth inning. It's now 7-0. Adam Wainwright pitched Adam Wainwright-esque tonight. Six innings pitched, four hits, three walks, four strikeouts. He labored a little bit in this game, but dropped his ERA to 2.88. And, I mean, what else can you say? The Cardinals are sitting a game back of the second wild card right now. If they win this game, they could be a half game out of the wild card because if you're looking at it right now, the Giants have a 5-1 lead on the Padres. So if the Padres lose this game, both they and the Cardinals will be a half game behind the Reds for that second wild card spot. And I'm perfectly honestly speechless.
You know what? It's pretty unbelievable. You know, like I heard somebody else say, this relationship between the Cardinals and the fans has almost been toxic this year. And just about the time you say, okay, we're done, it's over, they find a way to pull you back in and go, okay, wait a minute, maybe they can do something. And look at what they've done all of a sudden. You know, if they win tonight, it's 5 out of 6. You know, and they're beating the teams they had to beat. The last two series against the Reds, they needed to beat them. They won 4 out of 6. The Mets are right behind you. You're beating them up. You know, they're playing pretty solid baseball, you know, and a week ago we wouldn't have said that. They lost the first two games to the Dodgers. You know, they sat Arenado and Yachty in the first game. They sat Goldie in the second game. And I basically said to people, okay, the Cardinals are waving the white flag. You know, that's what it looked like. It looked like they were saying we're done. And somehow, some way, this team just doesn't quit. And, you know, and that's been a benchmark of the Cardinals for a long time now. You know, that even the years they didn't miss the playoffs, those teams never quit. You know, they fought till the very last day. And that's what this team's going to do. You know, I think they're going to beat, whether they make it or not, there's still a long way to go. But they're not just going to give up and go away. They're going to fight. You know, and I think those two games, Saturday and Sunday, seeing Nolan Arenado step up and hit those two big home runs, that home run on Saturday that he hit and the emotion that he had rounded home plate and going to the dugout, seeing him just let out that scream and then the reaction in the dugout from his teammates. You know, I think that lit a fire. And Miles Michaelis said it. He said, okay, look out because we might be ready to roll. And they very well could be. You know, I mean, we talked about it the other night. The National League, they've beat the Giants. They've played pretty well against the Dodgers. They've played pretty well against the Brewers. Have they won every game? No, the bullpens, but they've been competitive games. You get in the postseason, this team's not just going to roll over.
They really aren't, and you saw it tonight. I mean, Alex Reyes came in the eighth inning in a 3-0 game. He walked Francisco Lindor. He gave up a single that put runners on first and third with no outs. Then he goes boom, 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 three straight outs to basically secure the shutout at that point in time. So, yeah, this team, they're finding ways to win right now, and it's not as drastic as it was back in 2011. But what happened in 2011 around the trade deadline? The Cardinals made a deal to bring in some relief help. And, yeah, they brought in a starting pitcher at that point as well. But for the most part, they brought in two guys named Octavio Dotel and Mark Szczepanski. And one was a fireballer, in a sense, and one was a crafty pitcher. Well, let's see. Luis Garcia, guy that got off the scrap heap. He's a fireballer. TJ McFarland, who pitched tonight, is a crafty pitcher. I'm not saying, I mean, obviously you cannot compare years, but in a year where the Cardinals didn't do much when it came to making moves, it feels like the moves they made were exactly what they needed to. And you look at it and you go, damn it, Mo, you somehow saved your job yet again, especially if this team makes the playoffs, by doing something that people thought was absolute crap.
Yeah. And you talked about those guys in the bullpen that they picked up off the scrap heap. Let's not forget the two guys they got at the trade deadline that Cardinal fans were not happy about.
Yeah.
That didn't want any part of it. and John Lester and J.A. Happ, because those two guys have been huge down the stretch. And, yeah, it's been unbelievable. And you talk about 2011. I wouldn't compare this team to the 11 team.
06?
I would go 06 because, you know, that team was really good. They were in first place early really early. They were in first place, you know, in May and June. Then they had a bunch of injuries. They had guys fall. They did, couldn't get healthy. They couldn't win games. That team won 83 games. It came down to the last day of the season, and all of a sudden they got healthy. Well, guess what, folks? We're talking about this team getting healthy. There's two guys that could still be coming, that could still be huge parts of this run. Guys named Jack Flaherty and Dakota Hudson. While they're not going to be in the starting rotation, imagine getting into a playoff game, and imagine you have Wainwright go game one, and then you have a piggyback of Flaherty and Hudson in game two. That wouldn't be awful to get you through five or six innings.
No, not at all. And if the bullpen continues to pitch the way they're pitching right now, and that's a big if. It is a big, big if. Obviously, we've seen struggles of Reyes and Gallegos and Cabrera. We've seen them all struggle. But if they can put it all together, this is the team that could go on a run. Now, the one thing that's different about these, about those last two seasons are, you know, you didn't have the one game wild card playoff. For an extent, I mean, you're going to be playing the Dodgers likely in that first, although who knows, maybe they can overtake the Giants.
I think it's going to be the Giants, honestly. I kind of do. I still think the Dodgers are going to find a way to win that. And, you know, again, either way, if it's the Dodgers, you know, you've proven that you can play with them. You know, you're 3-4 against the Dodgers, so it's not like the Dodgers have beaten you up. You know, the Giants you have a winning record against. So, I mean, either one of those teams, and, you know, you go into that one-game playoff, it's probably – although it's going to be interesting because the way the Cardinals have their rotation set up right now, Waino is set up to pitch the last game of the season.
Yep.
But maybe you go into that wild-card game and you have Flaherty Hudson pitch, you know, or, you know – it's just going to depend on what happens. You know, maybe you get on a roll and you win a bunch of games here in the next couple of weeks and Waino doesn't have to pitch that last game and you've clinched that thing and he's ready to go for that first wild card game. But, you know, if you go in against the Giants, you're going to get Kevin Gausman, who's been pretty good all year. But the Cardinals did score some runs on him and actually beat him in San Francisco the first time they played him. If not, if it's the Dodgers, then, you know, it's going to be a hell of a matchup because it's probably going to be Waino and Scherzer. Which that would just be fun. But, again, you've shown you can beat the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are good, but they have stretches where they don't play well. So, I mean, one game, anything can happen. How many times have we seen that in all kinds of sports with those one-game playoffs, and you're like, wow, that team won? So you just got to get there, and you get there, and who knows what happens.
Very true. And as we speak right now, the Cardinals end up winning 7-0. Cody Whitley comes in and strikes out the side in the bottom of the ninth. The Cardinals, a 7-0 victory over the Mets. They pull within a half game of the Reds/Padres, although the Padres are playing right now. They are losing to the Giants as we speak, 5-1 in the top of the fourth. The Dodgers hold a 3-1 lead over the Diamondbacks. So if both those scores hold true, then the Dodgers will keep pace with the Giants, sitting just 2.5 back in that spot. Now, the big thing with this is I was looking at the Dodgers schedule. They don't play the Giants anymore this year, so there's no way they have head-to-head games for them to catch. But that last series against San Diego is one of those that could be a big, big one for the Cardinals. Obviously, the Cardinals have the Mets now, then the Padres and Brewers coming up. So they can do themselves a lot of favors by playing well in those series and getting a couple of big wins against San Diego, especially. You know, do we expect that to be the case when they end up facing the Padres? I mean, you think they can take 2 or 3 from them?
I think they can. I don't know why they can't. I mean, especially the way the Padres are playing right now. How would you like to have the Padres schedule? They still have to play the Giants 10 times. They've got the Dodgers, like you said, they've got the Cardinals. I mean, you talk about the Cardinals schedule being rough. How would you like to have that schedule?
I wouldn't. I would not want that one at all. That is basically sitting there saying, hey, guess what? San Diego fans, we ain't making the playoffs.
You know, and what are the Padres thinking? With all the moves and all the money they've spent in the last 2 years, if they don't make the postseason, what do you do going into next year? Because you can't – what starting pitcher are you going to go get now? Because you've gone out and you've gotten Clevenger, you've gotten Snell, you've gotten Darvish – you've gotten all these guys, and they either have gotten hurt or they haven't worked Or, you know, I mean, what do you do if you're the Padres?
I think you almost have to sit there, scrap everything, and hope that you have some young pitchers in your system, although they've traded a lot of young guys away.
They traded everybody.
So, yeah, I mean, I almost feel like you just kind of have to hope and pray that everybody gets healthy next year and stays healthy, and that's what you're looking at. You're looking at next year, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And then, you know, there's going to be a question now every year about Tatis and that shoulder and whether or not he can stay healthy. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions in San Diego, but it's going to be a fun next 18 days in Major League Baseball as we wind down to the first part of October and get ready for the playoffs, because there's going to be a lot of anxious nights, I have a feeling.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of those, especially with the way the Cardinals are playing right now, because a lot of these games are close. Now, tonight's game, obviously not so much, but the fact that yesterday's game, 2-0 victory, and that came on the strength of the 2-run home run that Arenado hit in the first inning. You know, you're basically on pins and needles the rest of the game, because you're hoping the pitching staff does well. You're hoping the bullpen does well. You're praying that the offense scores some runs, some more runs to supplement that. They don't, but they hang on to win 2-0. And I like what you said earlier about the fact that, you know, the emotion that Nolan Arenado put out there on Saturday after that home run, it was subdued around the field. You know, when he was crossed, you know, circling the bases, he held it inside. But as soon as he got done, crossed home plate, it was like, boom, the frustration of the season essentially released at that point. And he got a curtain call and all that. And I think you look at it and you go, man, you're right. I think Michaelis was right. This team is about ready to explode. And you said you compared this team to the 2006 team. It makes so much sense, because obviously they've got Yachty. They've got Wainwright. But they have an offense that's comparable to that. You've got guys in their prime. You've got a lot of talent up there. You've got a couple of youngsters as well that are situationally hitting well. You've got speed. Edmund and Harrison Bader, Carlson a little bit, Tyler O'Neill as well. So, yeah, I look at that, and I think you're right on. I think 06 is probably more of an apt comparison. And guess what? They're celebrating the 2011 team this weekend, and Wainwright could get his 2,000th strikeout this weekend as well. And they're also celebrating this year the 2006 World Series team as well. It's almost like things are in the cards this year.
You never know. Yeah, you never know. It could all be playing out all the way we hope it does. It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun. I wish I could sit here and say I'm 100% confident that they're going to the playoffs. I'm not. I feel good, though. I feel good. I like what I'm seeing. I think they've got a real good shot, but I'd probably put it at about 65% right now that I think they're going to make it.
I think after this time next week, if we come back next Monday and this team is either in that second wild card spot or within a game of the wild card spot still, I think that jumps up from 65 to about 77% for me, because that means they went through the week of the Mets, Padres, and Brewers, or almost the Brewers, and did enough to maintain what they needed to maintain. So, yeah, this is going to be a tough week and a half for sure, but the way they're playing, you just never know. So,
Real quick. You asked me if I thought they could beat the Padres. Here's what I'm going to say. If they win 2 out of 3, or if they would sweep the Mets, and then you come home next weekend and you've got the Padres, you're right in the hunt for the wild card. You've got those championship teams coming back. You may see, and we saw big crowds this weekend. You may finally see 45,000 people in that ballpark. And if those guys come out and you got 40,000 going crazy at Busch Stadium in a stretch run against the Padres, don't think that's not going to fire that ball club up too.
Oh, 100%. I mean, we saw what it did the last time the Cardinals played the Padres in the playoffs. Those home games were just incredible, and it frustrated the Padres for sure. All right, before we get out of here, we got to talk about the Real Men Wear Pink campaign. That's part of the reason why you shaved a little bit, but you also got a chance to put your pictures out as well. So tell us a little bit about the campaign, and man, you look sharp, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. We've talked about it a million times. I wasn't real comfortable doing that, but yeah, you can go to my page and see the wonderful pictures that we got taken for the campaign promotionally. Wednesday night, we have our gala, our unveiling, kind of the kickoff of the campaign officially happens on Wednesday night at Union Station. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then, yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff. You're going to see me wearing a lot of pink here in the next couple of weeks. We've got a couple of things we're trying to line up as far as fundraiser things that we're going to do as a show. We're going to be out supporting some other people. But please just help us however you can fight breast cancer. We've got a link to the donation page on our page. I've got one on my personal page. You know, you can go to the American Cancer Society and find links there to donate money. Just however you want to do it, but any little money that you can donate to help fight breast cancer is huge. And like I said, we've got a lot of fun stuff coming up here in the next couple of weeks that we're going to be doing. So make sure you stay tuned for that as well.
Most definitely. Stay tuned to all of our social media outlets as we gear up for the fundraising campaign for sure. 17-17, Ravens and Raiders with 6.5 to go in the fourth quarter. Ravens have the ball. Lamar Jackson drops back, throws a deep pass. Oh, huge catch right there. Takes them down inside the 10-yard line. That was a heck of a throw and catch by Lamar Jackson there. So it looks like the Ravens are at least going to be able to put up 3 points, if not more, as they look at it. Sammy Watkins, go figure. Sammy Watkins down the field with a huge, huge catch. We want to thank you guys for joining us tonight. It's been a great show. We will be off tomorrow, back with you on Wednesday as we give you our NFL picks, at least the Thursday night game, because obviously Thursday night games are back. So we'll have that. Anything else before we get out of here, Scott?
I don't think so. Real quick question about the Ravens-Raiders game. Have the Ravens pulled fans out of the stands yet to put in at running back?
Not yet. Not yet. Their young rookie running backs actually looked halfway decent in this game. But, I haven't seen anybody suiting up from the stands just yet, although they are playing in Vegas. So I don't know if they really want to pull any of those Vegas fans.
They may have to, man. I've never seen a team have running backs go down the way this team has.
It's been horrific so far this year. J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards out for them as well. So
Justice Hill's gone too.
That's right, Justice Hill too. So, and they brought in Latavius Murray. So, I mean, if that tells you how their running back situation is going, that's how their running back situation is going. So that'll bear watching. And if anybody's got aspirations of being an NFL running back, reach out to the Baltimore Ravens. Their Twitter account, I'm sure, would be thrilled to be in contact with you, and maybe you'll get a chance to suit up for the Ravens very, very soon.
Open tryouts in Baltimore coming soon.
So make sure you have insurance, because I feel like torn ACLs are a part of that organization right now too.
Yes, definitely.
All righty, guys. Once again, thank you for joining us tonight. For Scott, I am Wags. Have a great rest of your night, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.